All right, we are here. Well, as you work with your body, as a partner, you realize that you can't dominate and control it, tell it what to do. You got to negotiate. Your body will be willing to put up with a whole bunch of things that it doesn't consider pleasant if you will negotiate with it something really, really pleasant for it later. It will be willing to work with you. It will come maybe even more than halfway to you because it is in service to you. It, of course, was easy to abuse because it was that willing. It was easy to take advantage of a doormat, quote-unquote, you know. But if you listen to it and give it something it likes, there's a balance you'll find. And it won't be that difficult for you. Even if, for some reason or other, your lifestyle, your work situation, your life patterns, your times of getting up, going to bed, eating, blah, 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 and all that are not the best for the body will make a lot of adjustments for you. If you'll give it some love, give it some juicy, passionate, enthusiastic energy towards something that is yours, that expresses who you are, something that expresses that, because it is so thrilled, the body is so thrilled to be able to do something that expresses who you are in your world. It just is a thrill because it feels that it is fulfilling its mission and it feels satisfied. And you will feel full and you'll feel whole. It'll be a wonderful feeling. Now, as you and your body work at things, there's also the process of healing your body. The damage that has been done, the war has made an effect. There are scars from the battles. Your body has rebelled and rejected you, and you have rebelled and rejected your body, and over the years has created imbalances, disorientations, and of course health conditions, perhaps chronic. So what we're going to do now is we're going to look at some of the factors about healing those wounds, healing the scars now, so that the body can change the way it recovers itself. Because very often, especially if you have a chronic condition, is that the body can never really fully recover from it. Because the imbalance of energy that was still going on, in a sense, precluded a real complete restoration because it was continuing the war. So it could only restore to a certain point and then there would be more war, restore to a certain point. And that certain point would be the chronic level, a light, moderate, or a really harsh of a condition. And then there is the situation where, in a sense, you move a lot of energy. Some of you process a lot of emotional stuff, and sometimes this can do one of two things. The body will either hunker down in a particular area and just hold it right there, or the body will run its pain and issues are right around and all over the place, and you can never really focus on it because there's always something else popping up elsewhere. It's kind of like having a bunch of corks in water and trying to keep them all down underwater at once. And you can't hold them all down. One will pop over here and you go over here to push that one down. Another one will pop over here. And sometimes that kind of pattern shows up as well. But the healing process, now that you are getting into a connection with your body, the healing process is to remove those obstacles that actually are like stents, you know, that hold the war in place. These can come down now. You know, when a person has a difficulty in circulation, they'll put stents into their arteries to hold the arteries open so the blood can continue to flow. Now, the pattern of conflict within you, between you and your body, it's like those arteries, keeping those arteries open, in a sense, you put a stent in there to keep the battle going, to keep the pattern alive. Some of these stents are, or some of these factors that kind of hold the patterns in place, have to do with choices that you made under a sense of spiritual destiny in your past. All of you have had, at one lifetime or another, or in your imprints, which is the same thing, experience of being in a religious order, generally in the evolution of lifetimes, if you want to go into spiritual ascension. You're doing an evolutionary process. You go through periods where you belong to various religious orders. Many of you spent time in monasteries. You spent time in spiritual as well as military hierarchy. Hierarchical situations are very stagnant. They're very static. They do not allow for much change, flexibility, or creativity. They hold individuals in place in certain ways. And part of the maintenance of a hierarchy, religious, military, political, whatever hierarchy it is to keep certain people at certain high levels of elevation in control and keep other people at lower elevations under control. It is created through a sense of boundaries that the lower ranking ones cannot cross, that only the higher ones can cross. The highest ones can cross the most boundaries, have the most freedom, in other words. Right? So you have spent lifetimes experiencing a kind of imprisonment that is associated with spirituality in the body. It's part of the rejection of the physical life, of the lust for life, of the experience of physical pleasure and the senses. Most of the times you take a vow, or various vows, where you swear off certain aspects of yourself, where you deny certain parts of yourself. When you look at it, these vows are consistent across many different spiritual or religious orders. These vows enable those in higher levels of hierarchy to control those in lower positions through the manipulation of their chakras. Your chakras are energy vortices of you that receive information from your reality. And from your physical plane, reality, the illusion, receive information from your higher aspects of yourself and bring them to a place of central awareness, which is, in a sense, the spinal column, the Ida and Pingala of the Kundalini, the channel, the etheric channel through which all the chakras do connect, 1 through 7, in as far as the body is concerned. We're not talking about the ones outside the body, but the major ones of the body. The 7th one actually at the crown of the head is not actually within the body, but just beyond the body in the astral plane. However, because of its proximity to the body, we do include it. But there are vows that shut down the power of your chakras. For example, the root chakra, having to do with issues of survival and security. Very often what you do as a vow to close down the root chakra, to control the root chakra, is you make a vow of poverty. Right? Poverty means denial of material things. And At one point or another, you always, every one of you has made some kind of vow of poverty as a sacrifice to the spiritual life. It's one of the first things you do when you enter an order. You give up all your possessions. You basically throw your luck in with the order, and the order provides for you. You work for them for free. They do whatever they do. They bring in whatever they bring in from donations or whatever they, or from sales of booze or whatever they like to do. And this supports you, right? But you have nothing on your own. You have no leverage. You have nothing of your own. It's a abnegation of self-value. Those of you who are spiritual have to always go through a clearing of your sense of lack of self-value, because an old vow of poverty done in a spiritual context is extremely binding to the soul. And you share soul throughout all the lifetimes, so they do have a carryover. So we're going to get rid of that today, if that's all right with you. Okay. It's kind of critical if you're going to do some good, juicy manifesting. You want to be able to get rid of this particular vow. All right? Second chakra has to do with sexual procreation. It has to do with your image as a man or a woman. It has to do with your capacity to engender creative activity and to create. And what happens here very often is abstinence from sex, celibacy, you know, not celibacy per se, but abstinence, control of physical passion. This is where you had to chill yourself down, get yourself really calm. No passion for you. Well, maybe passion for God in your prayers or something like that. But to really feel the passion of your senses, of your sexuality. Sexuality is very highly controlled generally in religious orders. If your sexuality was, you know, abundant and prolific, by golly, they could really, it could really mess up things. One of the things that happened in the Catholic Church was that early on in the Catholic Church, the priests could marry and have families, and they began their own little dynasties. And so if they shut off their procreative ability somehow, they were going to be able to, that money, those wonderful riches, could go to the church. It wouldn't stay in the family. So they decided to do two things. One was sexual abstinence, and they put it as a sacrifice for spirituality. You sacrifice the senses and your passion and your own personal creativity as well. That is frowned upon as well. And you sacrifice all that in order to gain spiritual access. Now, there is a transmutation that can occur, that when you do not have sex, if you can rechannel your generative sexual passion creative energy differently in your energy field, it will awaken and activate Kundalini rising, which can take you up to the astral plane, out of body to the astral plane, where you can meet with ascended masters and do spiritual stuff and etc. And in the East, there are many yogis in the East who have practiced sexual abstinence. And they in a sense, the semen, the juices of the vaginal juices, the feminine, are all parts of this generative energy. And so it's rechanneled into Kundalini. And it can be done, except that in a religious order, it is not necessarily done by choice. It is done by decree, by vow. You're basically forced to accept that vow in order to join the order. So you see it as an either-or choice, spirituality or sex. Okay. This is probably one of the hardest things they've made everybody do. And it keeps people always worrying about whether they're acceptable or not, because if their sexual energies, which there generally are, because most people don't know how to transmute them over to the other channel, then they start to feel very guilty and shameful. And so shame keeps them low, keeps them down. That's where you generally stash your big wad of shame. It's there. All right. That's second chakra. That'll be fun to get rid of, won't it? All right. Third chakra. Solar plexus, an area of power. This is an area in which they expect you to humble yourself. In a sense, to be submissive. To refuse ego. Right? So, that's no fun either, is it? But they knew that they had to keep that ego down if a person had a sense of their individuality. And what they willed, that wouldn't work for the whole hierarchy. The will of the lower levels could not be allowed. Only the top people could express will. And then, of course, the way they held their position was saying, my will and God's will is one and the same, so you need to follow what I say. And because the lower levels are taught not to trust themselves. After all, they're busy shutting themselves down, right? They can't really receive accurate information. And they're shutting their bodies down. And their bodies and their conflict is on how to keep the body shut down. So they're imprisoned, in a sense, in that way. Fourth chakra. Again, we have this situation that the priests, for example, are expected to be celibate. In order to be a priest, you have to give up your family. You have to give up all love other than, quote-unquote, love of God. You cannot have love with another. Your love must be for God alone. This was really a sneaky trick to keep people from having love relationships and to see it as a spiritual gift, as a spiritual sacrifice. To sacrifice love. And so there are people who on a spiritual path cannot find a good mate. Where at the past they had vowed the celibacy. They had vowed to have no life partner, but to partner with, quote unquote, the divine, whatever that meant. Fifth chakra, throat chakra of expression. All of you have had the vow of silence at one point. Do not speak. Now, there's advantages to silence from time to time. But taking a vow of silence is saying, my expression endangers my spirituality. And therefore, I will cut off my own expression to give this as a sacrificial gift to God. All these vows are for the benefit of the top ranks of the hierarchy. Now, the only advantage that the hierarchy gives to anyone in it that is not on the highest level is that eventually you have an opportunity, perhaps, to ascend. After you bide your time and do it well and keep your nose clean, et cetera, you can move up ranks. And then you have people under you who can kind of do your bidding, and you have a little bit more freedom as you go up the ranks. So that's very appealing to societies that were very limited, very closed, and didn't have a lot of individuality allowed in them. They would go to this place. It had a lot of alternate safety and security. They would have to give themselves up, but hey, you know, they belonged to the hierarchy. They belonged. It satisfied a kind of a need. and they thought they were going to do something spiritual. Indeed, by that very intention, you've had lifetimes in monasteries and you have made certain spiritual progress. That's not what you're doing this lifetime, though. You've been there, done that, okay? So, vow of silence, no longer needed. All right. Sixth chakra, eyebrow chakra. This is total obedience. Obedience to authority. Instead of your vision, you have to adopt whatever the vision of reality is, whatever the philosophy of reality is to you. You have to sacrifice that. You have to obey authority. And in so doing, you are sacrificing yourself, your whole spiritual capacity, your visionary self, your gifts, your psychic gifts, your spiritual gifts, etc., are put to the usage of your clan or your tribe or your society or your culture, whatever. In a sense, you sacrifice that connection where you could make a divine connection to your divine self. You close that to submit to authority, to obey, to sacrifice yourself for your culture. And seventh chakra has to be submitting to the law or the will of God as it is, translated from the elders of the hell or the top rank of the hierarchy. So those are the rules. They come down from above, from higher up in your hierarchy. Instead of using your crown chakra to bring in light, energy, and power and fuel from your spiritual dimensions and from your crew, from your spirit helpers. These vows are very destructive when you're at the point of your spiritual development that you are now, because they essentially chop your physical body vitality, they sap it, they drain it, they imprison it, they trap it. And if you'll notice what area of your body that you may have the most difficulty in, you'll notice that the vow for that chakra and that's closest to that is very often part of the price that you've felt you had to pay. And you brought that in with you this time. So we want to get rid of that, okay? Now, another way of getting messages from your body is to listen to your symptoms. Now, we know you've probably done this and you probably have read, you know, Louise Hay's book, you know, the Heal Your Life, with the little list or the long list, where you can look up individual vertebrae and organs and so on and see what the messages are and see what the limitations are. And there are several lists out there besides hers. There's other lists too. If you look at all the lists, there are tremendous similarities. Because what you find is essentially whatever part of you is dysfunctional, the function of that part is the message. Right? For example, your eyes. The functional aspect of your eyes is to see. Now take that metaphorically, and if you have vision problems, there's issues about seeing. As far as knowing, understanding, realizing, imagining, envisioning. If you look at the function, let's say, of the kidneys. The kidney's job is to filter out toxicity, to let it go, to release it out of the body, to let go of, let it out with water, to flush it out, to flush out toxicity. That's its function. If you're having kidney problems, there's an issue that there is a contraction and a dryness of your emotions. and they're toxic. The driest emotion you have is fear. Fear is dry. Anger is fiery hot. Sorrow is cold and wet. There's certain energies around emotions. Rage can be cold and burning at the same time. These temperature energies, these moisture dryness, the kidney issues will probably have to do with dryness. Cold and dry. Your liver filters out toxicities, but also is responsible indirectly or directly with virtually every hormonal production in your body. So a lot of your passion is processed in your liver, and the enzymes and the hormones of your liver go into various parts of your body to take these messages. The messages of your desire, the messages of your passion and enthusiasm. But if you shut your liver down, you have rage. Anger and rage, toxic anger and rage. So every organ has its function. Every system, you have a circulatory system to keep things moving, to keep yourself in the flow, to get nourishment to every part of your body. If you have circulatory system issues, you're not nourishing yourself. You're not allowing a flow. If your circulatory system also includes heart issues, you're not allowing love to flow. Out or in. You're blocking it. So you see, you can use the messages of your body. Now, you probably already know that. But we'll go into more depth perhaps in questions. You can have an opportunity in a little while to ask some questions. So you want to look at it that way as well, because we're going to work with organs, systems. You want to think about what maybe is one of the messages. Now, you may have already thought about this years ago. It's like, okay, I've come to the point where I've processed everything I can do with my kidneys, or I've processed everything I can do with my adrenals. Adrenals have to do with motivation, energy, activation. You see, the part of the function of the body, every part of the body is perfect in its function. They all have to work in balance, of course. But any message that you can take can help you in clearing whatever the limitation is. On a daily basis, you can keep clearing it. You may think, okay, I've already cleared the anger out of my, and the frustration and the sense of helpless out of my adrenals. I've already, I'm activating myself. I'm allowing myself to motivate myself, but the adrenals are still down. Well, give them some time. You got to do it every day. You've got to motivate yourself appropriately every day. You can't just get rid of the issue and not change. But fortunately, you have a new arrangement with your body now, and you can negotiate some change. So we've got organs and systems. See what else we've got in there. We've got structure. Structural issues in your body have to do a lot with resistance, because in order for you to stand and walk in a balanced way, you've got to have certain muscles on one side resisting, others relaxing, so that you can shift your weight from foot to foot when you walk, so that you can hold your spine erect. You've got to keep certain muscles this way, and ligaments have got to be in balance this way and that way. And if they're not in harmony, if there are twists and turns there, it indicates a difficulty in accepting yourself. A difficulty in accepting that you're okay just the way you are. You're trying to twist and distort to fit into an image that you think you gotta have. your feet take you forward. So issues about moving forward will show up in the feet. Flexibility will show up in the knees. More flexibility, resistance showing up in the hips. Your joints have those kinds of messages too. Wrist, delicacy and flexibility. Arms, receiving. So play around with it. Play around with it and just kind of sense what it is and talk to your body about it and let your body confirm it for you. Let your body tell you that and say, yeah, and more, there's more. All right. So what we're going to do shortly is that we're going to do another meditation. We're going to do a healing with the body. And the way you're going to do it is by you and your body together commanding your healing. Command means to gather together and to decree together. Command. Command doesn't necessarily mean I'm the dominator and I'm telling you what to do. No, command is in a sense to take power together. To say this is choice we make together. So you and body are going to command your healing. And you can do this anytime. Once you do this technique, it's easy and very restorative. And you can do it on a daily basis as you go, here and there during your day. You have thoughts all day long. Why not put some command thoughts in there? You know? Why not talk to your body during the day? Get more feedback. Play with it a bit more. Have more fun with it. All right, so we're going to take in a few questions. Where do we begin?
Hi, Alexis. This is Sharon.
Well, hello, Sharon.
Well, since Monday when we had the reading, my abdominal area and the whole digestive system has really been very sore and painful.
Yes.
And I went to Ted, and he said that I should be on a 7-day fast. You said I should be on a 1 or 2-day one, and I'm confused about that. I've also been having adrenal rushes in the morning and even during the meditation. So I don't know if that's a response to not have any food in my body, but I'm very little, and it's really hard not to have food.
We know that. That's why we said 3 days, 2 or 3 days. We sense that 7 days is a bit too much strain. That's our perception, right? We know that you need, generally you need food with a good amount of density in it.
Yes.
And generally that you respond well to that because food with good density, good protein, particularly even meat in particular, can provide a certain level of hormones for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that those hormones are very supportive for people who are strong protein eaters. You need protein.
Right.
So that's why 2 or 3 days on juices is really essentially just to take the pressure off the digestive system. That's really what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
Because when your digestive system is down, even though you normally need a lot of protein, it can be really difficult for your system.
Mm-hmm.
Because protein does require more activity on the part of your liver. It requires more enzymes. It requires a greater, higher level of activity of your body chemistry. And the lighter the food, the less effort it is for your body. And we're not saying that you ought to stay off of meat, that vegetarian diet is the coolest. No. it's for some people, vegetarian diet is very nice. But we have found that for a lot of people that it reduces their hormones down and makes them a bit too placid. And it's not a surprise that there are the cultures that are predominantly vegetarian are cultures in where placidity and the calmness of the population is encouraged. Mm-hmm. So they won't rebel and get agitated, you know. Look at the caste system. Talk about a good hierarchy. Keeps everybody in their place. You're born there because spiritually that's your evolution, and don't ever expect that you can get out of that place. And furthermore, be a vegetarian so you're too peaceful and too placid and you don't have the energy to rebel. It worked. You see. But it's a really a cleansing diet. It's a purification diet is to go on juices. Now, the rushes of your adrenals are the adrenals trying to rebalance and restore themselves. When you get a rush of the adrenals, that actually is a good sign. It's a good sign. It would be a bad sign if you go too long on a low protein diet. Mm-hmm. That it would then be an aggravation sign. But initially, what they're trying to do is wake up. Mm-hmm. They're trying to increase your blood sugar. They're trying to increase your energy. So if you can get adequate sleep and rest through the 2 to 3 days.
I haven't been able to sleep, though, because I...
You haven't?
Not as well as I had been sleeping, because I think there's just so much
Well, when you're toxic, you're toxic and having to do a whole bunch of elimination, your liver is just overburdened. Mm-hmm. It's really working overtime. When your liver works overtime, generally, it keeps you awake. When the toxicity in your liver reaches a certain level, and when you're in a detox mode, sometimes the liver just can't deal with it and has to work all night. So it keeps you up all night. Mm-hmm. It has to work all night long, getting enzymes and protein particles here and building hormones here and sending the hormones here and thither and yon and so forth and so on and working with the adrenals and working with the kidneys and trying to get the overload out and so on and so on and so on. And so so one of the things that happens there is that it will send toxicity over to the kidneys to be released. And of course the adrenals sit on top of the kidneys. And in order for you to have a good release, the adrenals have to go give you just a little shot of adrenaline. Mm-hmm. Now, when you detox, that may be out of balance. But if you only do it for 2 or 3 days, at least your digestive system is not so overburdened. Mm-hmm. And it will help you get more gunk out. Mm-hmm. All right? Mm-hmm. If your intestines and colon agree to it, a colonic or something like that might help. Okay. But if there's damage to the colon wall...
Well, you said the walls were really thin.
They are thin. So you want to be very careful with something like that.
Yeah.
But that does get rid of a lot of toxicity and take a burden off the liver as well. Uh-huh. But recognize that you can do a little energy work on yourself when you're doing detoxing, just to put your hand over the liver, one hand over the liver, the other hand behind the liver, on top of the kidney behind the liver. So you have your hands placed on your body. Mm-hmm. And you send love and energy and light between your two palms, mm-hmm. right through the liver and through one of the kidneys. And you talk to it and say, I love you, I'm supportive of you, and thank you so much for all the work that you're doing, and please keep it up. And I promise you I'm not going to give you so much toxic stuff for just a little while, so you can catch up, right? And just feel that energy in between your hands. If you can just feel some energy in between your hands, it's very healing and very restorative, and the liver appreciates it a lot.
Oh, I will do that.
All right.
And then this is related to then the first, second, and third, but mostly the third chakra, which we just talked about as power.
Yes.
And my
Your will.
Around mm-hmm. Authority. And I'm just wondering, does this connect back to a past life that I really need to, I don't know if I need to work on that or just work on the power now.
Power now sounds good to us. Power, return to me.
Yeah.
Power, return to me. Yes.
As I said that, it felt like power now.
Yeah, it sounds like a slogan. You can even see the fist going,
yeah.
Power to the people, you know.
Yeah.
Power to Sharon, yeah. Okay. Yes. Well, you have had other lifetimes. As we said, all of you really have had lifetimes where you've had to humble yourself, in a sense, humiliate yourself in front of others to demonstrate your willingness to be on a spiritual path. Sometimes you'd have to do really stupid things. But
I feel like I've done some really stupid things where I've been humiliated in this lifetime.
Well, that's just a continuation of that stuff. You know, it's like, okay, you want to be spiritual? Well, here's what you had decided before, is that humbling yourself was really good for you. Right? Mm-hmm. So we'll do some more humble pie for you. Right? So, Oh, yes, Daniel, you have something to say?
No, I just had a little release there. That's disgusting, you know.
Humble pie, yes. Uh-huh. Well, you don't have to eat humble pie anymore, you know. But you also don't have to hide your shame anymore. You know, a lot of you, particularly it's part of the guy thing. We talked about the guy program of having to be strong and always appearing in charge and taking care of the money thing and whatever. A lot of the guy process is that when the guy realizes that he's embarrassing himself, he will go even more into making a promise to himself. He will hide that sucker. He will hide that shame. No one will ever see it. And that is a major liability. It goes and hides, guess where? In his second chakra. And what does that do to his prostate later on? So a lot of men's prostate issues are shame, that they're hiding away. I don't want anyone to see it. I don't want anyone to see my shame. I don't want to see, you know. But what messes up potency faster than anything but a prostate that's out of whack? A guy can't really do his sex thing. He can't keep it up. He can't follow through. It's a real problem. And the guys that submit to prostate surgery, sometimes these guys are impotent the rest of their lives. But they got the cancer out, maybe. You know? That cancer, that was the concentrated shame stuck in there. I'd rather have the concentrated shame than my prostate. Turns out to be a choice that some men make, because hiding the shame is more important as a motivation than being a healthy, free man, comfortable in his own masculinity, regardless of how he looks to everybody else. This third chakra, humbleness, was used in a way to shame men in religious orders. They would have to submit to all sorts of things, like flagellation, public flagellation, and public self-humiliation, and things like that. So, and you have had your share. All of you have done that at some point, thinking that was a spiritual thing to do. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. So, who's next?
Hi, Alexis.
Hello.
My name's Kay. Nice to meet you.
Good to meet you, too.
1 year ago, I broke a tooth on the upper right side, went for a crown prep, and my face, 1 year later, is still numb, tingling, and swollen, and it's affected my eyes.
Mm.
He used Septocaine, which a lot of dentists are using now, that has horrific side effects for a small percentage of us. where such a small percentage, they won't get it off the do not use list. So I've been told that there is no cure for it. I don't buy the program of no cures for anything.
Right.
For 1 year, I've been working on it with all the healing levels that I know and asking for the divine intervention, and it is still the same problem. He obviously, it's the trigeminal nerve as well as the mandibular nerve. The mandibular nerve should never have been affected since he was working on the upper. And it's the left side of my face as well as the right side of my face and my forehead. And shooting pains into my head, and my left ear is swollen every day. When it first happened, both ears were swollen. It affects the esophagus down into my heart. Some people that have this reaction cannot walk. So I don't know, I can't get any information on what it really does to foul up the body so badly. I don't have a computer. And anybody who's looked for me hasn't come up with anything. One suggestion was that it destroys the B12.
So have you been taking some B12?
I've been taking, I think it's 25,000, whatever it is on the bottle, units, whatever that is. I don't know those measurements. Yes, and I've added B1 to it and B6. I wonder what you could tell me. What can I do to get this healed so my face is normal? Also, my lower lip will droop. You know, I can make it go down with a certain jaw movement, and that's not normal either. And my fear is when the swelling goes away, from the blood vessels around my mouth and my lower lip is swollen, that lip will hang down. My fear is the swelling is what's holding it up.
All right, well, my, did you put a big toxic number into your nerves?
I said I found the only tar pit in Berkeley and climbed right into it. So I don't know how come I did that, and I don't need to know that now unless it's appropriate for some reason. I don't want to take too much time for my issue. I just want to know what to do to fix my face.
Well, nerves do take longer to heal, and the toxicity that's in there, the whole body is having to process.
Yes.
So we would say that it may take a while. A lot of your healing processes need to be concentrated on the liver.
All right.
The liver has the rage, the powerlessness that comes with an event such as this. It also has to process this extreme, poisonous, toxic substance. The reason that you reacted so strongly is that for you, this is extremely toxic, and your liver does not have the appropriate enzymes to process it. So the liver is working overtime, trying to deal with the impact of it without actually being able to get rid of it itself.
Yes.
So the toxic cane is still there in your body. And it has migrated. While it has done damage to the nerves, it has not really the nerves are actually okay, but they're not sending signals. The energy is running through the nerves, but it's chaotic.
Yes.
That's the tingling. The message centers through the nerve are not working. The way the nerves usually work is they send the signal to here, which goes there, to the go there. They have a network of communication. All nerves are part of a network of communication. And the network got closed down.
Yes.
All right. So the network has to do, in your case, energetically, from a emotional, spiritual point of view, having to do with expressing your rage. And we'd say on that level that you need to do work with that for a while to get out that sense of powerlessness, to get out the sense of helplessness, to take your power back from that dentist, to take your power back from that substance. just to keep doing that every day.
Keep on doing it.
Power returned to me.
Yes.
Power returned to me. Right? And the anger that's natural for you to feel over these things has also turned toxic because of the powerlessness.
Yes.
Like, the dentist is not responsive. Okay, there's nothing he can do. The culture of dentists is not responsive. There's nothing they're willing to do. In a sense, other people are destined to suffer this too. It's almost as if the value that possibly could come from your experience by keeping other people from suffering the same as part of your gift to the planet, you can't do.
I've been stopped every step of the way. I've been hollered at by oral surgeons
mm-hmm.
that refuse to see me because they know this dentist that did it to me. And
But you have to get out of the victim consciousness now. You have to stop fighting consensus reality. You got to step out of it. For right now, don't try to change anything in them. What you need to do is heal yourself and love yourself and just love yourself. Nurture yourself. Take care of yourself. Get out the rage. Take your power back. Stop being allowing yourself to hold the victim energy. And we know how hard that is because the one who channels us had a very similar experience with another Cain that damaged the communication of the nerves in her whole pelvic region. So she gets tingling there.
Okay. Then.
So she understands that. But the rage has to come out.
Well, I've been working on the rage to the point that 3 nights ago, somebody slammed my car window with a baseball bat.
It shows the rage is in process, but dear one, it's not out.
Yeah.
It's not out because it really is more a power issue. You're feeling very vulnerable and powerless.
Yes.
The baseball bat is saying, yes, you're still feeling vulnerable and powerless. Message, continue. Continue taking your power. Continue reminding yourself that you're a powerful reality creator. And yes, you may have created this on you, and yes, maybe this was not a really fun creation to do. But stop kicking yourself about it. Stop blaming anybody. Stop getting upset at yourself. Keep taking your power back. Keep loving yourself more. Accepting yourself. Nurturing and caring for yourself.
Is there any specific thing to do for the liver then?
We would say that energy work for the liver can be very helpful.
But anything specific?
Well, the channel has had a majorly positive effect in working with a specific energy healer for her liver. And so we suggest that you talk to the channel afterwards and she will give you the name of that person.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And also, we suggest that you just massage the jaw. Even though it's kind of numb, just kind of massage it and put light in it and love in it. Just massage around your face. Just massage around it. Give it the touch of love because it's so hurting. It's so hurting. It's so shut down and damaged and sad. It just needs some love and attention just to massage it and love it. And encourage it to communicate again. Those little connections may be a little bit on the frayed side, but they will eventually be able to communicate again when the toxic level comes down and off.
All right.
That's a hard one. We know. You're giving yourself a huge challenge to step out of victim, to step out of any self-recrimination, to step out of any judgments, to step free of consensus reality beliefs and from engaging in a battle that with the consensus reality. You know, a battle, a disagreement with dentists are a remarkably stubborn lot. How long has it taken them to fight mercury? They still fight mercury. They still try to shut down doctors, dentists, who take mercury fillings out. They don't do it as much quite in certain more enlightened areas, but still in certain parts of the country. They're absolutely hateful as an organization to dentists who dare to think differently.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason? If it was shown and proven and they accepted the proof that mercury poisoning is a bad thing, how liable would they be?
Mm-hmm.
It shut them all down. It's survival for them. And when you find somebody in survival, they will fight to the very end, even if it's not beneficial to their patients. They will shut themselves away from knowledge and truth and change. It's been like such in societies over and over and over again. You have numerous stories of this sort. It's not your mission to go and change the dental association's orientation. You can perhaps at some point be able to educate people. Right now, if you don't have a computer, it's really kind of hard to do that, because the network is out there. That's where people are plugging into knowledge, is on the computer. But there will come a time where maybe you can do that. But by that time, you will have found your way out. You understand?
Thank you.
All right.
Looking forward to my private time with you as well.
Oh, all right.
Thank
Good.
You.
Yes,
Thank
all right. You're welcome. All right. Who else?
Hi, Galexis. This is Kirby.
All right. Hello.
Hi. The issue I want to talk about with regard to my health is this: the impact of my building this house over here, and that it's had on me. Initially, I had a budget, and upon building the foundation, it went really over budget because we found we had to dig a lot deeper to put piers in the foundation. At that time, I had a major asthma attack. Had to go to Elizabeth took me to the hospital. And
that must have been terrifying.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It cost twice as much as I had sort of budgeted for at that point. And since then, I have to say I'm generally there's a tiredness that I have that I'm not that used to in my life. And I attribute it to just having to put every spare cent into that building. And even though I had my best year last year and financially and everything, I don't feel it because it all went into that. And it's still not done.
Well, they did a movie about that called The Money Pit.
Yes. So I find myself doing things like rewarding myself with food, not spending money on things that I would like to do and like that, because I feel like I just need to finish this thing. And I do have negotiated with myself in terms of it being a temporary sacrifice. I don't know. I just want to see if there's a more elegant way for me to deal with this in terms of my body. And the other thing that's come up for me is just borrowing the money to just get it done rather than creeping along as my cash flow, paying for it as my cash flow, goes with that. So,
if you can afford it, we would suggest that borrowing the money might be actually a really good thing and to move it through. Because what you have out there is a huge, huge vulture sitting out there looming over your house. It's like a vulture, is just sitting out there waiting for you to die. There's a sense of looming.
Yeah.
It hangs over you. If you've, any of you who've experienced debt, like we talked with Phil last night, debt that hangs over your head, right? It's like a vulture. It's kind of looms over you. Asthma has a lot to do with overwhelm.
Mm-hmm.
All right? It's your inner child self responding. Because the inner child goes, huh, I don't know how to deal with this. This is way too big for me. And your inner child goes into major overwhelm and starts to panic and starts to breathe really oddly. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Another aspect of the asthma that comes in is that somehow or another you feel so powerless or you feel so helpless that you feel that you can't even properly occupy your space. In a sense, you can't claim your space. This is taking your space from you.
Yes.
All right? Asthma, if you don't have enough space, it's like you don't have enough air. It's like you're trapped in a little tiny box that you're going to run out of air soon. All right? Sometimes there, for some people, younger people, not you, but in asthma and particularly people that feel that they don't deserve space. They don't deserve to have space. But somehow or another that they've got to grab it where they can. You see, and sometimes you may even have that like grab it where you can kind of feeling. But for the most part, we would suggest that in meditation, to go to your child self. And you might even check in with your 13-year-old.
Okay.
Who established connections with your body. That was where you started to put your body program, your mind and body program together for adulthood. And to kind of reprogram that so that you don't have to go into overwhelm.
Okay.
And then if you can afford it, yes, borrow it and get it done. Then what you pay every month, if you can afford to do that, mm-hmm. then what you pay every month is so much easier than sitting there saying, I don't know when it will ever get done. And I have to deny myself all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel guilty just giving myself some pleasure. So all that self-denial will, in a sense, go. You'll have a budget that you can work with.
Uh-huh.
All right, so that's what we would recommend. Now, if you have something hanging over you, over a long-term basis, a health problem, a financial problem, something that kind of looms there, your challenge is to be able to have it still hanging there until it's time for it to go, but for you to be able to dismantle all the charge and all the issues and all the weight and all the significance and everything that you stash to it. And it's not an easy thing to do. But the first thing you got to do, remove judgments. Remove beliefs, limiting beliefs around it. You just keep dismantling. And sometimes, you know, for example, for you, you may have crossed the back of your mind, I can't really live until that thing is done. I'm not going to have a life till it's done. Or I'm not going to have a life till the debt is paid. Or I'm not going to have a life until the thing is healed. Or I'm not going to have a life until. And so you postpone your life, waiting for something to happen here. And it hovers over you and hovers over you. So meanwhile, you feel like your life is being stifled. All right? So the challenge is to take that meaning off of it. It has nothing to do with whether you can live your life well or not. It has nothing to do with whether you are a powerful reality creator or not and how much you accept of that. Because you are, regardless of what you have hanging over you or what issue that you have that's chronic. Your self-image may be, you may see yourself sometimes as weak or powerless or fragile or overburdened, or whatever it is, how you see yourself. And that sticks you into a smaller self and makes the problem, whatever it is, loom larger. So what you want to do is to see yourself as a powerful reality creator and say, by golly, I am very gifted. I know how to create a really sucky reality. Now, if I can just take that gift and shift it to another area of my life, which can be a positive and wonderful benefit for me. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to look to see how to do that. The reality that you give what looms over you needs to be removed from that and given to that which you prefer. To give to your life, to give to the richness and the fullness of your life. The challenge is to keep your self-image up, to remind you who you are, to keep your divinity in mind, in focus. It's a big challenge. Because when you're feeling small and powerless, it's kind of hard to say, I am God, Goddess, all that is in action. Right. Yeah. I'm this puny, insignificant little thing, and I'm like a worm, and anytime God's going to look down on me and say, oh, and squish me. Now, we're exaggerating, of course. God would never do that. God's saying, what are you doing down there? Come on up here. It's more like what God would say. So you want to restore your connection to the divine when you have a problem like that. Something looming over you physically, emotionally, financially, whatever way it is. To stay connected to your luminescent self. To recognize you are a beautiful, brilliant light being. And you did not give yourself a challenge that you could not overcome. You don't know how to create a challenge too big for yourself. It may appear so, but you will find your way. It may take a while, but you will find your way. And when you come out on the other side, you will be so grateful for the amount of power and beauty and love that you've discovered. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a short break now. Let's keep it really short if we can, okay? If we can do it in 5 minutes, so just in case you need to go pee and stuff like that, run around really quick and get some water or nibble something or whatever you need to do and get back to your chair. And then we're going to do the meditation where we're going to do a lot of very powerful healing work for all your organs, and glands and your body and your systems, and that release those vows, all right? So think about what you'd like to heal, what you want to put on the table, what you want to give up today. All right, and tomorrow we'll do replacements, okay? We'll get some new energies in there. All right, dear ones, we'll take a break. Be with you shortly. Farewell.